The release of the documentary Split, A Deeper Divide couldn't be more timely. The film is a thorough investigation into the partisanship that is paralyzing American politics. Writer, director, and producer Kelly Nikes has spent 8 years traveling the country to ask questions that go to the heart of why our democracy has become so passionately divided. The U.S. State Department used the film to launch an Election 2012 program that introduces high school students abroad to American democracy and our political process. The film will be shown on the documentary channel tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Kelly Nikes to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
Well, I will say I watched the film last night, and it's fascinating, and you obviously have done a wonderful job on it. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you've been working for a long time, traveling the country and talking to people. Give people a sense, because basically at the heart of this film are six questions that you wanted to explore.
I think that the six questions, and thank you for the kind words on the film. We did work a tremendous amount on it, and the six questions that you so rightly point out are actually the key to the structure that allowed us to make the film nonpartisan, which is ultimately what the overlying goal was for the film, was to not have an ideological script attached to this investigation, but to have an actual objective investigation of what it is that is cleaving our electorate so deeply, what the different factors are. And those six questions are the focuses of the factors that we found to be valuable in investigating what they are that separate us so much. So we look at, for example, and I don't want to give the film away entirely, but we look at, for example, the role that media plays, the role that faith plays, you know, religiosity of voters. How conservative are you? How secular are you? And the role that plays in how you get mobilized according to certain hot-button topics. The role that discourse plays, for example. The very nature of divide. How do we consider ourselves divided? What are the factors of those divides? Are those divides now deeper than they have been historically, putting them in a historical context? So we did our best recognizing that it is an incredibly large topic to tackle. We did our best to look at those factors that we found to be the most illuminating in this moment in contemporary society for how it is that we've become so divided.
There is a moment in the film, rather early on in the film, where you are traveling and you talk to people about their thoughts about class and about wealth. And you have one person saying, look, it's the Republicans, the reason we have this is the Republicans have everything. They're rich. They are trying to take more money from the poor and have this trickle-down effect, and it's not going to work. And then you have another person who says, look, all the rich people are Democrats. Look at the Kennedys. Look at the Clintons. Look at this structure. And they're the ones with the power. They're the ones with the wealth. And the reason you have such tension is because of the Democrats holding the purse strings. And you're driving around in your car, and you sort of, you know, just are talking and saying, you know, this is what is so fascinating about this is because both think they're right.
Yeah, the amazing thing, and I'm glad that you point that section out. The amazing thing now is, and this gets discussed further in the film, is that we can look as Americans, we can look at the same picture and see two completely different images. It depends on where we get our media. It depends on what blogs we read or what online news sources we go to. In this case, it happens to be class, and that's obviously in a recession, and in a time when we see historically unprecedented economic inequality, the difference between the upper class and the rest of society. That notion of class is a particularly important one, and also historically one that culturally has been difficult for us to discuss. I mean, America has, you know, in contrast to Europe, for example, we've always prided ourselves on being a classless society, that there's great social mobility, that you can make yourself what you want to be, that this is the land of achievement, the land of opportunity, and that people are finding confusing narratives around that now because there isn't the type of social mobility that there has been historically. And then who's responsible for that, putting that into a political context, for us was one of the more eye-opening aspects of the film.
When you... It is certainly an eye-opening aspect, because if you take it a step further, as you do, and I mean, you bring us down many, many roads, and because of the goal not to be partisan in any way, you know, we're left with many, many questions. And one of the questions that I was left with, which I think is so fundamental in all of this, is, do we want to change it? I mean, we complain about it, but do we want to give a little in order to change it?
I think that's a great question. I mean, obviously, the takeaway is, what is the step forward? What is the next era of American politics going to look like, the next era of American civic engagement? And I think that when we compare the tone of the dialogue and also the voting records, if we look, for example, at the congressional voting records from the 70s, they're much more coalesced around the center. Nixon's policies, I think, are a stunning example of that. Many of his actions as president were, regardless of what you think about him, were to the left of some of the things that subsequent Democratic administrations have been able to do. He created the EPA. He created OSHA. He was the last president prior to Barack Obama, to successfully almost enact a universal health care plan. But there are politicians that we have recognized and admired from previous generations, without becoming overly nostalgic, who were much more moderate in tone. I think Evan Bayh wrote about this very thoughtfully in his New York op-ed piece titled "Why I'm Leaving the Senate." There was a more centrist tone. There was a sense of consensus. But in this current day and age of zero-sum approach to politics, where by definition, if you lose, I win, that has changed the game. And I think that that's worthy of questioning whether that's what we want to be the dominating strategy in this national conversation.
One of the things that I found so effective in the film, and you know, you had me at hello when you started this, was showing the maps and red state, blue state. And you start off with a very simple electoral college map. And then throughout the film, we change that of looking at counties, of looking at districts, of we're not red state, blue state, we're red counties, we're blue counties, we're red districts. And it's so much more than just one or the other. That's one point you make in the film. Another, which I think was certainly a very powerful moment, and I would like to explore just a little bit with you, is how this has been since this nation's founding, that we have gone back and forth. This is changing. This isn't something that is set in stone. We evolve as a nation and have evolved as a nation, and there has always been this conflict between one party and the other.
I think that's a really important point to make, Joe. I think that is crucial. And one of the things that we strive to do in the film, and as you point out, is to put this in a larger historical context. We have had a two-party system since the nation's founding. There have been exceptions at times where a third party has come in and replaced one of the two parties, but ultimately it has come down to a choice of A or B. And in a binary system like that, you are going to fight for every last vote, because it's not a parliamentary system where you have coalitions that come to consensus. It is, you are going to walk away with, you know, the one who's over the goal line first. You're going to walk away with one winner. And I think it's very important to recognize that. At the same time, what's important to recognize is that there has been a shift away from a respect for a consensus. When you see, for example, Olympia Snowe, who retires and making very explicit statements that she's not retiring because she can't raise the money. She can. She's not retiring because of the challenge that's coming. She would handily defeat the challenge that she's seeing. But she has said explicitly, I'm retiring because I don't think that Washington, the atmosphere in Washington, is a place to legislate anymore, is a place to be able to work together to solve the problems that we face as a nation. And I think that that's indicative of this binary system working in a way that is ultimately destructive and not constructive. And I think that, to touch on what you addressed with the maps, using those, I think one of the points that's interesting about them is the fact that this idea, this terminology of red state, blue state, was coined by Tim Russert in 2000. This has not been around forever. And it is a very simplistic, as we tried to show, and reductive in certain ways, way of interpreting the electorate, which is far more complex and has far more interesting defining characteristics. But it's, I think, an outgrowth if we look that the coverage of presidential campaigns in the last 2 months from September to November, in 1968, sound bites were nearly 50 seconds long, and now they are less than 8 seconds. It forces one to have really short, quippy, soundbite-oriented news analysis that ultimately shortchanges the viewer and the audience and the electorate because we don't get the nuanced picture that we need to look at something as complex as the American electorate.
Well, one of the things that I think you just brought up that is, you know, so fascinating about all of this is, okay, yes, we have a divide, but perhaps that divide has never been quite as bitter as we're seeing now, evidenced by the comments of Senator Snowe. And you look at that and you say, you know, there is a civility that seems to be out of the window. Soundbite certainly a part of it, and we have very polarized media and places where people can go and kind of get whipped up in a frenzy. But can that shift to a point where we see some? I guess I ask the question of, you know, if not now, when? We could have said this during healthcare. We could have said this during, of course, you know, the lead up to the Iraq War. We could have said this about the economy. We could say this about jobs. I mean, if not now, when? If people aren't going to say, all right, for the good of the country, for the good of us and how I'm living, we have to come to some understanding and we have to give a little to get something in return. And you wonder at what scenario we reach where the American people come and our elected officials come to that understanding.
I think that it's a great point because obviously, you know, as many people have said, never let a good crisis go to waste. And
right.
It has been the reaction of the people to events that has seen the change. It doesn't, and Chuck Hagel, who we had the great fortune to interview, was very honest about this. He said, you know, political leaders will tell you that they lead, but ultimately that they follow is what the truth is. The people lead, and it does come about by events. It's Rosa Parks choosing as an individual not that day to go and take a seat at the back of the bus, that she just could not abide by that anymore, and suddenly that ends up being a spark in many ways, obviously of something that was waiting for its activating and its catalyzing moment. But I think that we are going to find the same type of surprise. I agree, it's surprising given the fact that the recession has hurt such a broad swath of Americans and that the recovery has been enjoyed by such an incredibly narrow sliver. You would expect that there might have been more of a popular response to that inequality, to that notion of fairness in the American experience. And that hasn't come, and obviously it didn't do it around healthcare, and there are a number of instances that we could look at.
Because outrage,
where the outrage didn't materialize, I think that as it historically has come, it'll come, it'll be unexpected, but it won't be a surprise. And I think that we will see a small act of outrage, of civil disobedience, a small act of someone making a statement in a thoughtful way. That's not hurtful and that's not aggressive, but someone making a statement in a thoughtful way that people viscerally understand has that emotional resonance, because I just can't imagine having gone cross country, having spoken to people from all across the political spectrum and from all walks of life, that the status quo is one that's going to maintain.
You can find out more information about the documentary. It's called Split, A Deeper Divide. It's going to be shown on the documentary channel tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. That's the premiere?
That is the broadcast premiere. We've been playing theatrically around the country, but this is the time for folks to be able to see it nationwide.
Documentary channel tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and you can also find out more information by going to splitdoc.com, S-P-L-I-T, splitdoc, D-O-C. .com, and find out more about the film. Kelly, it should be something that every American watches just to get baseline knowledge and go from there. You did a great job, and I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Joe, it's a pleasure being on. Thank you so much.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the film is Split, A Deeper Divide, being shown tomorrow night at 8 o'clock on the Documentary Channel. You can also find out more information at splitdoc.com. Our thanks to Kelly Nikes. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.